The judge in Trump's trial gave money to a group called Stop Republicans. And he is presiding over a court case regarding the Republican.
Look, I'm not here making a political case for Donald Trump. I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I have an open mind, but I want the election to be fair. I don't want the thumb, or in this case, the elbow, of a weaponized criminal justice system to determine the outcome of this election.
You have nearly 7 out of 10 Americans say politics is playing a role in these trials, and nearly 6 out of 10 are saying that Joe Biden is responsible for these trials against Donald Trump. So I would say, you know, in spite of what Katie Couric might say and saying we have anti-intellectualism going on with the electorate right now, the voters are way smarter than the elites and the establishment give them credit for. They're seeing through these trials for what they are.
Hey, welcome to the Sean Spicer Show. I am Mike Slater, host of Breitbart News Daily on SiriusXM Patriot, which we simulcast on the First TV. Filling in for Sean today. Today's show, we're going to focus on the Trump trial in New York City that's going on right now and will be going on for the next few months. It's hard to pick the most absurd of all the trials. And this one's tricky because it's hard to pick the most absurd part of this trial. But this one's causing the most damage at the moment. Maybe. It's certainly taking its time. One caller on the radio today put it, Trump's hemmed in. He's hemmed in New York City for a while. So can Trump judo spin that into his advantage? We'll talk about that. Also, Alan Dershowitz talking about the legal aspects of this, including all the problems with the judge and the problems with the jury selection. And then Jim McLaughlin's going to be here. He's a Trump pollster on how people perceive this. Not people like you and me who watch this on Sean Spicer's show, but regular people who don't pay attention to things. How are they perceiving all this? That's all coming up next, right here on the Sean Spicer Show. Hey, thanks for watching the Sean Spicer Show. Today, we're going to focus on Donald Trump and the latest witch hunt trial against him. We're going to come out right with the most surreal thing about this trial. The judge in New York, this Manhattan judge, the judge presiding over this case, the judge that is presiding over Trump's first criminal trial, the first criminal trial against a president ever. This judge has donated money to Joe Biden in 2020. And not only has he donated money to Joe Biden, he's also donated money to a group called the Progressive Turnout Project. And best of all, it's like a progressive get out the vote group. He gave money to a group called Stop Republicans. Are you kidding me? So just to be clear, the judge in Trump's trial gave money to a group called Stop Republicans. And he is presiding over a court case regarding the Republican. And we're just like, that's fine. Everyone, no big deal. Trump's lawyers are like, hey, you should recuse yourself. He's like, nah, I'm not gonna. And that's it. That's the end of it. And no one talks about it anymore. And that is surreal. On the Stop Republican website, it says Stop Republicans is a grassroots funded effort. Grassroots also funded by Manhattan judges dedicated to resisting the Republican Party and Donald Trump's radical right-wing legacy. It's in the name. They have Trump's name in the mission statement. And that judge donated to that group. Come on now. Now, someone listening, watching right now, may say, ah, Slater, come on, you're making a big deal out of nothing. He only donated $15 to Joe Biden, and he donated $10 to each of the other group. $35, you're making a big deal about $35. Yeah, that's even weirder. Why would you only give $10 to a group called Stop? That's just bizarre. But my point's not the amount. My argument's not that his donations to these groups tipped the scale in the previous election or will tip the scale in this election. He doesn't give billions. That's not the point. The point is that this obviously proves where his allegiance lies. Also, not to mention, his daughter works at a Democratic fundraising organization that raised $93 million. And she's not an intern. And she's not like in charge of marketing. She's the president of that organization. Oh, some guy called into the radio show today. He said, Slater, this is so crazy. I was on the city council of my little tiny town or the town council, and they made me recuse myself because there was an issue going on my street. They wanted to put a bench on my street and I had to recuse myself. This guy is donating money to his political opponent. And he's like, nah, I'm fine. This guy's a total Democratic Party activist and he loves it. Loves his great fortune that he has so much power over this man who he clearly hates. So here's the gist of the trial. Obviously, we'll talk more about this with Alan Dershowitz coming up. The gist is Donald Trump paid Stormy Daniels hush money, $130,000. And because that benefited his political campaign, he should have, and didn't, disclose it as a campaign expense. Now, this question as to whether or not he even should have done that as a campaign expense, but okay. Normally, that question would go to the Federal Election Commission. There's six members on it, three Republicans, three Democrats. And then they would make a decision and they would issue a fine. They didn't do that. They didn't come to any decision. They've issued no fine. They haven't done anything. The Department of Justice hasn't done anything. So you're like, okay, well, it's the end of the story, right? Well, enter New York City. And they said, Trump did not write hush money on his business ledger. So we're going to get him for falsifying business records. Now, normally that's a misdemeanor. But Alvin Bragg, who's the DA in Manhattan, he makes a practice normally of downgrading misdemeanors. He's downgraded 52% of felonies. In 2022, he downgraded 52% of felonies to misdemeanors. All right, so he usually downgrades things. But in this case, he took what is normally a misdemeanor and turned it into a felony. How? Because falsifying business records, if done in the committing of another crime, which in this case is the campaign finance violation, a crime which he was never charged with, can be considered a felony. Do you see how insane that is? Now, the process is punishment. The punishment is the process, of course, which was very clear when the judge told Trump that he had to be in the courtroom every single day. And he walked out the first day. And he's like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, well, I missed my son's graduation. You remember all that stuff, right? And now obviously he can't go out campaigning like he otherwise would. I talked to one of Trump's lawyers the other day and I said, well, how often is this? How often is this trial gonna be? And he's like, oh, it'll probably be every day except for Wednesdays. They take Wednesdays off for probably 6 to 8 weeks. Could go on for longer. I think it's in their interest to drag it out. Also worth noting that this is in Manhattan, where in 2020, Biden won 85-15. So as if a hack judge wasn't enough, I believe we have something of a biased jury. They're picking the jurors as we speak. The jurors have to fill out a questionnaire. And the questionnaire is designed to weed out anyone who might be a Trump supporter. Questions like, have you ever been to a Trump rally? And of course, that guy would be gone. A couple jurors have made it through the first round of questioning. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm totally impartial and unbiased. And then later found out by the Trump team that they wrote stuff on social media like, lock them up. Can you imagine? Can you imagine that person on the jury? And then they made it to the second phase of the selection process. So that means in the first phase, they're like, oh, Donald who? Donald Trump? Trump? No, I never heard of him. I don't even know that guy. You need 12 people who have been in a coma for the last 10 years in Manhattan in order to have a non-biased jury pool. But somehow those people made it through the first round, being like, oh, totally fine. Meanwhile, they look in their social media and the person wrote, lock them up. Other people some of these other jurors have posts celebrating his loss in 2020. So the question is, how many of those people did make it through and are in the final jury?
All right, both Mother's and Father's Day are coming up, and I have the perfect gift for you if you want to outdo a brother or a sister, or you just want to see yourself in their home, because you know that they'll have to hang this when I tell you about it. This is the most unique and meaningful gift that you could probably give your parent right now. Check this out. This is what I did. I took a picture of me. You probably have to get your own, or I'll let you download this if you really want it. But check out what it became. A very unique painting. Here's the cool part about this. The folks at Paint Your Life right now will allow you to choose the artist that you want, the type that you want, oil, acrylic, charcoal, you name it, plus an amazing frame. And if you text Spicer to 87204 right now, you get 20% off and free shipping. It takes about 5 minutes to set the whole thing up. You couldn't make it easier for such an amazing gift. Text Spicer to 87204 and see what the folks at Paint Your Life will do for you. You know that your parents will have to hang this in the house. They just have to, right? And the quality is absolutely amazing, completely unique. You get to stay in touch with the artist. They'll send you a video of it. So right now, do this. Text Spicer to 87204. Free shipping and 20% off. Message and data rates may apply. All right, guys, when we lose power, whether it's because our power grid gets hit or a power line goes down or natural disaster strikes, whether it's a day or a week or a month, if you've been subject to this, you know what I'm talking about. You're trying to figure out how you're going to power your phone, your computer, your medical devices. I mean, your refrigerator, all that food. Well, I've got the answer for you because I have in my house a Patriot Power Generator 2000X. And if you go to fourpatriots.com/Spicer, you can have one too, right? This is the kind of thing that you want to get ahead of when an emergency hits. Whether it's you, your family, a neighbor, a loved one, you want to make sure that you can take them. And the Patriot Power Generator is completely portable. Now, you can look on the video that I've got up there. I've got it in my house. There are no fumes, no gas to fill it up with. It's got no noise. You bring it into your house. You can bring it wherever you go if you needed to bring it to a friend's house. And it's completely powered through solar panels. So you don't have to worry about going out and getting and refilling it with gas. You can bring it into the house and then power it up through the power of the sun with a solar panel that comes free with it. Get ahead of a crisis now. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer and get your Patriot Power Generator 2000X so you can be prepared like I am.
Speaking of bias trials and speaking of Alan Dershowitz, O.J. Simpson died the other day. I'm surprised that this story got like 2 minutes of news coverage. Like no one's really talking about it anymore, but whatever. Trial of the century. He's dead. All right. There was a scene in the miniseries. So there were two sort of documentaries. There was like a miniseries made about OJ, and then there was a real life documentary. They were both awesome. It's been a while since I've seen them, but I remember them being awesome. But in the miniseries, it's the big climax of the thing, right? And they say you're not guilty. And then the jurors, they walk out of the courtroom. One of the jurors walked out of the courtroom and they gave OJ the Black Power salute. There is the fist in the air. That's from the movie. This clip, that picture right there is from the movie. A Black Power to the whitest black guy in the world. Gave the Black Power salute. Now I have trouble watching movies based off of real life events because I the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, did that really happen? And it bothers me because I don't know if it really happened or not. That really happened. That guy's name is Lionel Cryer. He was a Black Panther. A Black Panther got on the O.J. Simpson murder trial jury. Okay? There was no chance that O.J. was going to be found guilty. Not a chance. We talked about this on my radio show, that the O.J. trial was in the context of the Rodney King beating that took place 2 years prior. We don't have time to relitigate it all here, but that whole story of Rodney King was nothing like what people thought happened. There's a lot of similarities with George Floyd, with Rodney King. But O.J. came out of that, the whole thing, and he was never going to be found guilty, no matter what evidence was presented. Why not? Because people come to conclusions immediately, and it's almost impossible to change someone's mind. Here is Marcia Clark, of course, the prosecution, reflecting on that case.
5 days of getting the case. A friend of mine who was working in Compton, which is a very African-American heavy community, came to me and said, this is a loser. You're going to lose this case. They don't like this case. No one wants to believe it. I'm telling you, you're toast.
That is a profound statement right there. No one wants to believe it. People don't want it to be true. And no matter what evidence was shown to those jurors, at least one of them was a Black Panther, nothing would have changed their mind. This is true with Trump's trial as well, but it's the opposite. No matter what you show these people, they know that Trump is guilty. Here's one of the OJ jurors a couple of years after the trial.
Do you think that they're members of the jury that voted to acquit OJ because of Rodney King?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
How many of you think felt that way?
Oh, probably 90% of them.
90%? Did you feel that way?
Yes.
That was payback.
Uh-huh.
You think that's right?
Whatevs. This is the same treatment that Trump's going to get in this trial. Partisan judge, Manhattan jurors, and when presented with whatever evidence, when presented with the law, they're all going to say, Mike Slater, here for Sean Spicer, Alan Dershowitz next. Hey, welcome back to the Sean Spicer Show. Mike Slater filling in for Sean. I want to go right to the great Alan Dershowitz, former professor emeritus at Harvard, and the Dersh Show for his own show. Mr. Dershowitz, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Lots of questions about this Trump trial. How is it possible that this judge could donate to Joe Biden and to a group called Stop Republicans and not be recused from the case?
Well, that's only one of many criteria that should apply to him. His daughter is apparently making money just by the fact that he is the trial judge. And if there is a conviction, she'll make more money by raising funds for Democrats off this trial. We know that that's certainly going to happen. And so his daughter can financially benefit from his rulings. And this is such a clear case for recusal. It's not even close. And there are so many judges in New York, many of whom hate Trump as much, who could sit on the case without there being the appearance of conflict of interest, that this judge is acting very foolishly in remaining on the case. But, you know, he would like to be the one to get the credit for convicting Donald Trump and destroying his presidential campaign, which is what he's doing. This case is paradigmatic election interference. There's nothing to the case at all. It's a made-up case. It could be done against you and me or anybody else, number one. Number two, the judge should have no right to keep him in the courtroom. He should have an absolute right to leave the courtroom anytime he wants, except if he has to be identified or if there's a reason for him being in the courtroom. In many states and in the federal court, a defendant has the right to be at trial, but the right not to be at trial. Even under the New York statute, you can make a motion, but there has to be consent by the prosecution to be relieved from being at the trial on a given day. And the prosecution shouldn't have that power. He has the right to be there. They have no right to make him be there.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. All right. So there's how does it normally work in a criminal trial in New York? Can you leave if you want to not be there?
Here's a motion. It's called Section 340.5. On motion by the defendant, the court may, and then here's the key sentence, may, in the absence of an objection by the people, issue an order dispensing with the requirement that the defendant be there. Now, it's unconstitutional to give the prosecution the power to make him stay in the court when he's running for president. He has a First Amendment right, and we have a First Amendment right to hear him. Look, I'm not here making a political case for Donald Trump. I don't know who I'm going to vote for. I have an open mind, but I want the election to be fair. I don't want the thumb, or in this case, the elbow, of a weaponized criminal justice system to determine the outcome of this election. And right now, this case can have a big impact in two different ways. Number one, it'll keep him from campaigning. Here we have President Biden campaigning daily in Pennsylvania, a key state, and Trump has to start his campaigning at 6 o'clock at night, and he'll be exhausted to court the next day. He has the right, and we have the right to hear him and to listen to his point. And that clearly should outweigh any claim that the government has for keeping him in the courtroom. They have no right to have him present at the trial. He only has the right to be present if he chooses to be there.
Is there any, have they given a justification as to why? First of all, is it up to the judge about him being there? And has he given any reason why he demands that he must be there every day?
Well, it normally is up to the judge, but not under the unconstitutional New York statute. The New York statute says, the court may, in the absence of an objection by the people. You can't have the prosecution, one side of an adversarial system, having the final say. So it should be up to the judge, and the judge should allow him to leave. I have never heard of a case where a criminal defendant was not allowed to attend his own son's graduation or couldn't attend an argument in the Supreme Court. involving his future. This judge is abusing his discretion, and the statute itself is unconstitutional. Look, this judge has engaged in unconstitutional conduct repeatedly, imposing a gag order that stops him from complaining about the witnesses who are testifying against him. He has the right to tell the public these witnesses are liars. You know, the porn star has already signed a statement saying that, you know, they didn't have sex, or, you know, there was no money paid. Obviously, he's entitled to bring that to the attention of the public. This is a public trial. This is a political trial. And he has the right to defend himself in the court of public opinion as well as in the court of law. So that's an unconstitutional restriction. Also, he's entitled to complain about the judge's daughter making money off this case. That's something the public has the right to hear from him. So the judge is violating the Constitution on a daily basis.
Hmm. What is a normal, proper use of a gag order that makes it clear that this is an abuse of a gag order?
Well, gag orders generally are applied to prevent the public from learning about evidence that the jury should not know about. For example, if the police beat a confession out of somebody and he admits to the crime, but it wouldn't be admissible at trial, there is a gag order saying to the prosecution, you can't disclose the fact that he's admitted his guilt because that will get to the jury. So influencing the jury, obviously threats against jurors, individual jurors, can be prohibited. But generally, gag orders are frowned upon because they're a prior restraint. I argued the Pentagon Papers case in the United States Supreme Court on behalf of Senator Gravel, wrote the brief, and the Supreme Court rejected prior restraint. And a gag order is a prior restraint. It's telling somebody if you talk, you will be held in contempt. And courts look askance on any prior restraint, and particularly gag orders have to be viewed very, very narrowly. Now, the gag order does to attack the judge, and he's taking full advantage of that, but it doesn't allow him to attack the judge's daughter, and he should be allowed to because she's part of the reason why the judge should be recused in this case.
And one more question on the recusal. Who is in charge of deciding if the judge is recused? Is it the judge?
Initially, the judge makes the decision, but then it can be appealed, and it can be appealed both before the trial under a writ of mandamus, or it can be appealed if there is a conviction after the trial.
Okay. So I reckon we'll get to that point eventually too. If you bumped into this judge on the street, Mr. Dershowitz, what would you say to him?
Get off the case. Why are you distorting justice this way? Look, half of America thinks that this case should not be tried in front of you. The appearance of conflict of interest is enough to disqualify you. And how about your daughter? First question I'd ask you is, have you discussed this case with your daughter at all? Do you know whether she's making money off the fact that you're presiding over a case that could result in the Democrats winning the election, which would benefit her enormously as a person who makes money off advising, you know, Schiff and Kamala Harris and other Democrats?
Of course. I want to talk about jury selection here. I find this quite fascinating, this whole process. How is it possible in a district that Biden won 85-15? And then what do we need to know about the process? I know they had a questionnaire and they asked questions like, have you ever been to a Trump rally and where do you get your news? How is it possible in a situation like this to get what we call a fair jury?
It's impossible. And the questionnaire is a dumb questionnaire. It asks questions like this. Do you hate Donald Trump so much that you can't possibly render a fair verdict? What person is going to say, I can't render a fair verdict? Yeah. Anybody say, I mean, you know, President Biden, if he were asked to serve, say, oh, I can render a fair verdict. Everybody's going to say they can render a fair verdict. The purpose of the jury questionnaire should not be to get just jurors' opinions on whether they can do that. That's up to the court. They should get the facts. What have you ever said about Donald Trump? What have people said to you about Donald Trump? What have you heard on NPR or on MSNBC or on CNN about Donald Trump? I'm concerned about this jury. It seems, of the seven jurors that were selected as of last night at least, it seems very slanted in favor of conviction based on what the jurors have read and what jobs they have. Two of them are lawyers. You know, maybe lawyers will see through this thin case and say, even though the judge will tell them, you have no role to play in deciding whether the law is okay. You only have to decide facts. But lawyers are going to say to themselves, maybe, gee, what is this case about? Alexander Hamilton could have gone to jail under the theory of this case. He too paid hush money to prevent an affair with a married woman from coming out. And he tried to initially suppress it and deny it. Of course, eventually it did come out. But lawyers may see through it. But I think that the way I saw the seven jurors described, six of them seemed inclined toward the possibility of a conviction. I think the best he's likely to do is a hung jury. He may get that.
Yeah.
We know that 12 Angry Men is a movie and not real. And often when juries, even if there are some jury holdouts, they often go with the majority after a couple of days.
Okay. Well, I sort of want that sort of answers my last question for you. We mentioned in the first segment the O.J. Simpson trial. You're familiar with that, I believe. And sure. my argument is that in an emotionally charged case like that and like this, people are going to come in with their opinions already. And it's almost impossible, just human nature. My argument is human nature is it's almost impossible to change someone's mind. What, having lived through that and living through this and many other experiences, what have you learned about human nature when it comes to convincing people about the truth?
Some people can change their minds. In the OJ case, there was a woman named Anissa Ashenbach, the white woman juror, who changed her mind. She came away convinced that he probably did it, but that the police had tampered with evidence and they shouldn't convict based on tampered evidence, because if the police poured blood on a sock, who knows what else they may have done. So there were changes of mind there in that case. I actually made the argument about her in the court because we called her the demon. We were very afraid because she had previously been on a jury that had been 11-1 for acquittal, and she turned it around and got them to go 12-0 for conviction. So we had to persuade her, but she was persuadable. Of course, 2 weeks later, after she rendered the verdict of not guilty, she publicly stated she wishes she had voted for conviction. So, change their minds temporarily, but perhaps not permanently. But when it comes to somebody like Donald Trump, people have firm views. Look, people on Martha's Vineyard still don't talk to me because I defended Donald Trump. People in New York City don't talk to me because I defended Donald Trump. Even though I didn't vote for him, I defended him. The feelings, the hatreds are so deep about Donald Trump that I think the likelihood of getting 12 jurors and six alternates that really have a completely open mind about this is very difficult. But, if you have good lawyers, you can perhaps persuade them to believe that there is a reasonable doubt in this case. In this case, it's not much about facts. It's more about the law and about psychoanalyzing Trump. I mean, the government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the only reason that he didn't disclose the hush money was to get elected president rather than to prevent his wife from embarrassment, to help his business, to help his children. And that kind of analysis is very hard to do on a defendant, particularly Donald Trump, who will not take the witness stand. That's a clear prediction, because if he were to take the witness stand, the first question he would be asked is, did you have sex with Ms. Daniels? And if he says no, they're going to indict him for perjury. If he says, that's a serious admission. I mean, the only answer he could give is, I've had sex with so many porn stars, I really don't remember. And he's not going to give that answer.
Alan Dershowitz, former professor emeritus at Harvard, and listen to his show, The Dersh Show, everywhere you get podcasts, etc. Mr. Dershowitz, wonderful to talk to you. Thank you for your wisdom.
Likewise, thank you.
Appreciate it. Coming up next, we'll see how this is affecting the polls and the people. Jim McLaughlin coming up next. I'm Mike Slater, filling in for Sean Spicer.
All right, if you're up and about all day and you've got tired feet, I've got the solution for you. Gravity Defier shoes. They are the ultimate in comfort shoes. They support you when you're on the go. So if you're running errands, you're on the sideline with the kids at all their games, you're in meetings day in and day out, this is the answer you've been looking for. Every single pair of Gravity Defier shoes comes with custom orthotics. You know what I'm talking about if you've had feet issues or you're getting tired all day. Custom orthotics are the answers. And these shoes all have the Verso patented trampoline technology in them that adds a level of cushion in the heel right where you need it most. That's going to help absorb shock throughout the day to give you back some of that energy, right? And the shoes also will improve your posture. It helps with stress. It helps put the key muscle groups into action. We're talking your calves and other major muscle groups so that you're using the right muscles as you walk around. There are countless customer reviews that talk about the positive results of Gravener Defyer shoes. The best part is right now, if you go to GDEFY.com and enter code SPICER30, go to GDEFY.com, enter the code SPICER30, you get $30 off your $150 order. You can go there right now, $30 off $150 order if you go to GDEFY.com and enter code word SPICER30.
Hey, welcome back to the Sean Spicer Show. I'm Mike Slater, Slater Radio on the Twitter and the Instagram. I host Breitbart News Daily every weekday on Sirius XM Patriot, which we simulcast on the First TV as well. Awesome conversation with Alan Dershowitz there. Just fantastic. Want to follow that up with Jim McLaughlin from McLaughlin and Associates. He is a Trump pollster. Jim, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Great to be here, Mike.
Good to talk to you. What is a Trump pollster?
You know, I think President Trump views us as a necessary evil. One of the beauties of President Trump is he doesn't do policy. He doesn't do his positions based off of polls. He does it what works and what's common sense and what's best for the American people. But we've been with him from the very beginning, going back to 2015 and 2016. And it's been a really, really fun ride.
So his campaign hires you to do internal polling? Or do you make your polls public at all? Or how's that work?
Yeah, very little of our stuff actually becomes public. It's just like, you know, your typical campaign. I always tell folks 98-99% of what we do is done internally for our clients. So, and you know, look, we do it to try to not necessarily, I mean, Donald Trump, again, you don't tell him where to be on issues. Donald Trump knows where he is on issues. And what we try to give him is the best information possible in terms of targeting. And I can still remember the Friday before Election Day on the Sean Hannity show, my brother and I both said we thought Donald Trump was going to win back in 2016. And if you remember, all the media polls had Donald Trump down by double digits. You had folks like the New York Times saying, you know, there was a 90% plus chance that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And obviously those polls proved to be right. And we thought he was going to win in places like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And remember, they told us those were the blue wall and, you know, the Democrats couldn't lose there. And obviously they lost. And the interesting thing is right now in those states, Donald Trump is running really well, especially because he has a clear advantage on the issue of the economy over Joe Biden.
Okay. So I wanted to emphasize that you're internal. So I feel like that I feel like you have an incentive to just tell the truth. There's no external incentive to alter public perception based off of some sort of weird push poll or something like that, right? Like you're only interested in the truth, so you can present the truth.
And I think one of the reasons why we've been with the president from the very beginning is because our advice and our polls have been accurate. And, you know, and I think the president has really appreciated that over the years. Yeah,
surely. Okay, so what is the public perception, regular people's perception? Not people who watch the Sean Spicer show, who are obsessed with politics, but just your regular person, what's their perception of these trials? That's been the focus of our show today. What do they make of these?
You know, it's really interesting. And we've been testing this for a while, but you have nearly 7 out of 10 Americans say politics is playing a role in these trials. And nearly 6 out of 10 are saying that Joe Biden is responsible for these trials against Donald Trump. So I always say, you know, in spite of what Katie Couric might say and saying we have anti-intellectualism going on with the electorate right now, the voters are way smarter than the elites and the establishment give them credit for. They're seeing through these trials for what they are. It's election interference. These are police state tactics. And one of the most interesting parts is, you know who it's backfiring on the most with the Democrats? Hispanic voters. Hispanic voters hate this lawfare that's going on with Joe Biden and his DOJ, because they will tell you, they tell us all the time in focus groups, they've seen this in the countries they've come from. They compare Joe Biden and the Democrats' tactics on this to what, you know, people like the Castro brothers, Maduro, Ortega, and Chavez do. So it's a very interesting phenomena out there. And the president is right when he talks about how this is backfiring. And look at how President Trump was received yesterday at a bodega in Harlem.
Trump, we love Trump! We love Trump! We love Trump!
Joe Biden would never get that kind of response. Those are those real Americans that you're talking about.
I don't want to brush past that Hispanic point there and why that's the case. That's a huge insight and a very, very important point. Jim, we'll have to talk more later. We only got 3 minutes, but what should we think about when it comes to general polls of the country, which have X amount of value? But really what matters is Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and what the people of Wisconsin think about this lawfare or whatever issue is important. How do you parse that out?
You're 100% correct. Because, you know, in the presidential race, we don't really pay too much attention to national polls. What matters is what's going on in the battleground states right now. And, you know, there's 6-7 battleground states. And the interesting part about it, these aren't even my numbers. These were done by another firm yesterday, a credible firm, Echelon Insights. And in their polling, they had Donald Trump up in every single battleground state. And the closest one was Wisconsin, where they had President Trump only up by a point. And you're looking at places like Georgia, where obviously Georgia was close last time, very close. And they say Joe Biden won, but, you know, who knows? But anyway, but they actually have Donald Trump up by 10 points right now in Georgia. Jeez. And I think it's a great example of how this lawfare strategy is backfiring. Because they're looking at the partisans in Fulton County in Atlanta, and the Georgia voters don't like what they say.
And the Democrats need to cater to that base, too. So there's political value in that, but at what cost? We only got about a minute, Jim, but what happens if there's a conviction, do you think? Do you think that changes people's calculus about this?
I think it's already baked in. Okay. And you look at, when you have liberals like Alan Dershowitz, liberals like Jonathan Turley, but they're honest liberals and they're constitutionalists. When they're saying that these trials are a travesty, you know something is going on there. And they're trying to turn what would be normally a misdemeanor in a place like New York, which the Southern District of New York already looked at it. Alvin Bragg's predecessor, Cy Vance, looked at it, and they all said that there was nothing here. And again, I think when you saw the response on the streets of New York yesterday to Donald Trump, which is an overwhelmingly Democratic area, I think, you know, these lawfare strategies are clearly backfiring on the Democrats.
Good to know, because they're not taking their foot off the gas. So good. Keep it going. Jim McLaughlin from McLaughlin Associates, a Trump pollster. Jim, great to talk to you, man.
Oh, great to be here.
Appreciate it. Keep up the great work. Coming up next, we'll talk about what we need to know. 2 points we need to know about how progressives think. If they don't believe in truth and they don't believe in right and wrong, how do they know where to go and what to do? Talk about that next. I'm Mike Slater, filling in for Sean Spicer on The Sean Spicer Show. Hey, welcome back to The Sean Spicer Show. Mike Slater filling in today. My last few minutes with you here. And thank you, Sean, for letting me fill in. I want to talk about progressives and give a little insight into how progressives think. 2 points to make here. In a progressive's mind, there's no such thing as truth. So therefore, there's no such thing as right and wrong. Okay, so how do we make sense of things? Everything's based off of oppressed and oppressors. This explains the left's love affair with Gaza and Hamas. There's no right and wrong in this situation, because there's no such thing as right and wrong ever in any situation. So all questions in this nature need to be decided by who is the oppressed and who are the oppressors. So Israel, they're the oppressors, so they can do no wrong. Or excuse me, they can do no right, no matter what happens. And Hamas, they're the oppressed, they can do no wrong, no matter what they do. They could kill 1,200 Jews, for instance, and it's just liberation, because they're oppressed. This is how the left thinks about everything. And it's really hard for conservatives to understand this because we think in terms of what's right and wrong. They don't. They think in terms of what's oppressed, who's oppressed, and who are the oppressors. Everything is through that lens. This is why, that's why the left can destroy statues. But if you dare drive over a rainbow painted on a crosswalk, that's a hate crime. Now, you could argue both are wrong, but to them, there's no right or wrong. There's no principle here. It's just that in one instance, it was harm done to an oppressed group. So it's okay. And therefore, harm done to the oppressors, tearing down a statue is no big deal. In fact, it's good. This is how the left, they can shut down the Golden Gate Bridge the other day. They can do that because they're oppressed and they're doing it on behalf of the oppressed. Nothing else matters. There is no good or bad. There is no right or wrong. Second point to make on education. Because there is no such thing as right and wrong, the left seeks to destroy. Because they're oppressed, destruction is morally justified. They seek and they destroy. And they've intentionally taken over every institution in this country, from our universities, of course, first, but all the way up to the U.S. military. And Sean, I know, obviously talks about this all. And then everything in between. Everything in between and everywhere in between. Someone the other day, they live in a big progressive city. And they noticed that in their city, they issued a proclamation declaring that their city is now a safe space against bigotry. It was this big pride proclamation they made, and they condemned all forms of hate and against bigotry in their town, blah, blah. And it's wonderful. This city committed to ending bigotry. It's wonderful to see. And they decided to have a pride parade in this city. Fantastic. Nothing surprising, right? That's what they do in cities. Here's the kicker of this story. It's not in the big, bustling, progressive metropolis of Chicago. It's in the big, bustling, progressive metropolis of Livingston, Montana, about 120 miles outside of the nearest big city of Billings, Montana. They're having this weekend their first pride parade in a town population 8,000 people. It's a pride parade and a whole weekend full of events. They got the drag show on Friday night. They have a family-friendly drag show, of course, so you can support the queer youth in Livingston, Montana. And then another drag show at night. That one's adults only. So this is a very interesting story here. Livingston, Montana. There may be only 5 communists in that entire town. But here's the thing. They're all on the school board. There may only be a couple other progressives in that entire town. They're all on the city council. Because that's what communists do. They don't build anything. They just seek out and destroy. And Jesse Kelly offered a rebuke to fellow conservatives. He says, you put on a MAGA hat and post on Facebook and you think you're political. But the communist gets himself on your city's parks department. Why? Because he knows what politics really is about. The communists in your town, they're all in on government and school boards and committees. They all have committees and every other sphere of influence. So while you're at work, they're putting on drag shows at your school library. See what I mean? Even in Livingston, Montana, they saw weakness and they went after Livingston. So what do we do? We're going to leave it to Sean and Jesse Kelly to give the political advice. That's not my main thing. I like to speak to a different place. We need men and women who boldly speak the truth. Because their initial premise is there's no such thing as truth. So now we get to decide what is good. No. Truth exists. Truth exists. And we will speak it. And we will determine what is good. We can't be afraid of the truth. I just found the other day in Isaiah 3:10, God says, say to the righteous that it shall be well with them. You will be mocked. You will be ridiculed. You will be persecuted. But God says, all will be well with you. So take heart, buck up, get some courage, gird your loins. Let's go. All will be well with you. Charles Spurgeon said, we can laugh. We can laugh when 10,000 devils declare all to be bad. So we have a promise that all will be well. Don't ever give up. Don't ever let your guard down. We have to be men and women of virtue and a light for the truth. In a dark world, it's not that hard. But It's up to us. Mike Slater, filling in for Sean Spicer. Spread the word.